I threw the starfish into the ocean. Smile. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. I threw the starfish into the ocean. How many times do we do things that are natural and ordinary, and we feel good about it? Where does a starfish belong? A starfish belongs in the ocean. He belongs in the tidal waters. He belongs where he is in his own nature. You take a starfish home, and what happens when you take a starfish home? When you take a starfish home, first thing you do is let him dry out. And then he's no longer a starfish. He's just a shell. And being just a shell is not all that it's not all that exciting. Because a starfish that is the shell is just a dead reminder of something that was. But when we throw a starfish into the ocean, we are doing really great and wonderful things. We're having such a wonderful time doing that. And it gives us a good feeling. It gives us a good feeling of having nature be nature, of having nature function in the way it's designed to function. Let's look at ourselves. Who are we? We are human beings, and we'd like to say we're divine beings, and we throw ourselves into the ocean of human activity. And throwing ourselves in the ocean of human activity, we have a great opportunity to follow this point. You're not being tested, you're being fortified. As we throw ourselves into the ocean of activity, we look at all the things that are going on around us. We look at all the people that are going on around us and the things that they're doing and they're saying. And we look at them and we have the tendency to judge. Now, whenever we judge, what are we doing? Whenever we judge, we are saying that is what we believe. So we watch two children as they're arguing with each other, and we say, oh, they're arguing with each other. They're never cooperating. They're never getting along well. They're not, you know, having a good time together. And while we're thinking these thoughts, the children stop arguing, and they go on with their playing. And the argument was just a momentary thing, not something they were going to make as a lifelong vendetta against one another. It's just a matter that they were having a discussion over a particular point, and they argued about it, and when they were done arguing, they went about their playing again. Human beings, or adults, we might say, forget about that. They like to make a big thing out of the little things. Children make little things out of the little things and just go on. And you say, well, the little things in children's lives are the big things in big people's lives, because those are just the way it goes. Well, all right. If the little things in children's lives are the big things of big people's lives, why don't big people solve them the same way children solve them? Children solve them by discussing it, arguing about it, shouting and screaming at each other, hitting each other for a moment, and then, boom, it's over. And they're back to being best of friends. Hey, that sounds just like the human race, doesn't it? They get angry about something, they have a war, and they shoot each other, and they're making a difficult time for everybody. And then as soon as the war is over, then back to business as usual. Back to, I think it's the best, the winners of every war are the losers. The winners of every war are the losers. Because what happens to the losers? The losers are required not to make armaments anymore. They're required not to make gunpowder and things like that for a series of years. They're required not to invest in what might be called warfare activities. Well, now, in the United States, for instance, the amount of money that's spent on warfare materials is outrageous. And also the amount of money that's spent on research into the stars. Well, isn't that wonderful? And I'm not saying we shouldn't do these things, but I'm saying perhaps we might reconsider. If every country would have a hiatus, and every country would have an agreement. We will not have a war for 50 years. Wow. Then every country could build, and during that 50 years, no armaments. No armaments are built up. And so every country, then during that period of time, would build up their own industries, would build up their own country, would make jobs for people, would create circumstances so that there wouldn't be poverty, so that there would be the proper amount of wisdom in planting crops so that the foods were available wherever they were needed. No. Wouldn't that be interesting? What are we spending in armament? We are spending trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. Not just billions, but trillions. I mean, Bill Gates couldn't even buy all the armaments. Okay. Now, what are other countries spending? They're spending exorbitant amounts of money on armaments, too. Now, Germany is free of the limitation. Japan is free of the limitation, and they can build up their armaments again. Well, why? Why? They're getting along just fine in the world. Their economic cooperation is just beautiful. Japan is one of the outstanding nations economically. Germany is another outstanding nation economically because they don't have to spend armament money, you know. They don't have to take part of their money and spend it on protection for their country. The United Nations and other organizations protect their country, so they don't have to do that. Now, isn't that sad? Isn't that sad that we are not put into our own natural environment and allowed to live a harmonious life? We should take the starfish, and if we see them up on the shore and still alive, throw them back in the ocean. Let them live. And certainly not take them out purposely from the ocean. Not take them purposely away from the ocean, because we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. If we take them purposely out of the ocean, what's going to happen to them? Bah! They dry up and die. Now, that's the same thing with anything that we do, too. If we have people that are unhappy, people who want to be mercenaries, people who want to be fighters, well, they go and join the French Foreign Legion or something of that nature. And what are we doing now? We're helping other nations of the world with their building up of of their national activities, such as oil wells and things like that. And in helping them to build up the oil wells, we're sending over our people to work for them. Now, isn't that a wonderful thing? Why don't we send over our people to work on our own oil wells? Why don't we send people out to work on our own things? Well, I think, unfortunately, some of the bigger nations are thinking, let's drain the little nations of all their oil and use up all their money, and that way they will not have any money to buy armaments or other things to be angry with, and then after their oil's all used up, then we'll have to go in and help them and take care of them. You know, how interesting. Now, is that the philosophy? Is that the attitudes that are being thought? Well, perhaps. What about you? What about me as individuals? How do we respond to our world? How do we respond to the puddle that we're in? Are we the starfish that like to remain in our tide pools? Are we the starfish that like to remain in the ocean where we are at home in peace? Will some sort of marauder come along and give us a hard time from time to time? True. They do that from time to time. But the thing is, that's just part of the development of life. Now, how can we put ourselves in right order so that we do not have to experience hard times? How can we put ourselves in right order so we do not have to experience tough experiences? Is it natural that we have to have growing experiences? As Irene says, I cannot imagine anything needing to be a tough experience. Tough experiences are unnecessary, and she's right. When we say all is in divine order, does that mean that we can have a cold? Does that mean we can have broken legs? Does that mean we can have problems of poverty or whatever the circumstances may be? No. When we say all is in divine order, then we are in divine order. We are living harmoniously with the oneness of all. We are living harmoniously with the principle of abundance, the principle of wholeness, the principle of everything that's good. And when we live in this oneness, there are no tough times. Well, that's not realistic. That's, hey, very true. That's not realistic from the way life is thought about at the moment. When will we stop thinking about life in its limited thoughts of the moment? I enjoyed a picture graph that came through from Mary Willett. It was a story about the ice near Vladivostok in Russia. And every year, this community, which lives on this frozen river and so on, has an ice program. And they build ice figures, ice monuments, and all that sort of stuff. Now, the Great Wall of China is a symbol, okay? Well, they built an ice symbol of the Great Wall of China. It melts in the summer, but in the winter time, which is a long winter, they have this Great Wall of China that they built. What a lot of effort they put into these things, and they're beautiful. Well, the Great Wall of China, from the picture that we see of it, is perhaps a mile or two or three long. Woo-hoo! But it's going uphill to downhill, you know? And it is a toboggan slide. It is a ride. And it has two passageways, you know, and a divider in the middle. And if you slide down in your raincoat, you know, because you don't need anything else, you go zoom, you really fly. And if, as they said, if you are wearing corduroy trousers, you got brakes on, you don't slide. And you'd think, surely you'd slide with that too. But corduroy trousers in Russia are perhaps a little more stronger than corduroy trousers that we're used to. Because they don't have to be corduroy. Now, fascinating, fascinating. Now, what a lovely way to take the Wall of China, which is a blockage between nations, and make it into an amusement. Mm-hmm. What a lovely thing. And then they said that the ice horses that they made were designed in such a way that the children could sit on them and have their pictures taken, you know? And what a lovely thing. And they have a contest from all over the world. People come and build things in this sub-zero weather, working outside when they don't have to be outside. They could be in Florida, you know, but they're working outside in this sub-zero weather. And they're building these things, just having the time of their life, with a creativity that's unimaginable. Now, why don't they have a war, you know? They could spend all that money that melts again come spring, you know. They could spend all that money on wars and on conflicts and on problems, but they don't do it. And you know, when we think of the Russians, we think of them as war people. And when we think of the Germans, we think of them as war people. Think of the Japanese, we think of them as war people. Well, who are the war people? The war people are their leaders, you know. The war people are the presidents and the czars and dictators who want to have more over which to be in charge of. But the people want to have fun. The people want to build ice palaces. The people want to do joyous things. The people want to scuba dive. I don't know what the figure is, but it'd be interesting to look at it one. How much money is spent on recreation by, say, the people of the United States? How much money is spent in recreation out of the total national income? Now, isn't that interesting? And then we're reading here about the Caruso Railroad being reconstructed between San Diego and the Imperial Valley, and that there's an investment of $1.5 million put into it. And I think to myself, that would be exciting if that were, if this were 1920, you know. But this is 2004, and my neighbor buys $1 million house. So, I mean, they're fixing the railroad thing up for $1.5 million. And some of these houses are $5 million, and people don't think a thing about buying them, you know. And Bill Gates with his $37 billion, you know. And what is all this about? What is all this about? Where are our priorities, our values, our thinking? And this railroad that they're fixing up between San Diego and the Imperial Valley, it used to be, but with changing times, and Mr. Spreckle of the Spreckle Sugar Company, he long since has moved on in his various dimensions of life, and the things that we spend money on are amazing, really amazing. And Mr. Spreckle probably spent $500,000 to put up the entire railroad in the first place. But of course, that was in money values back in the 1800s, which would be quite different from today. So I threw the starfish in the ocean and let him be having a good time and be happy where he would be happy. What do we do with our life? Where do we spend our time? Do we spend our time in a happy time, in a happy relationship? Or are we spending our time in unhappiness? I had a lady writing about the child in her life, not doing very well. And the child is experiencing unhappiness and being dishonest and a lot of other things. And as I wrote back to the lady, I said, you know, the countries of the world, I didn't say this, the countries of the world are like that child. That child has a home with his mother and the man the mother's living with. The child has a home with the father and the woman that he's living with. The child has a home with the grandmother and the friends that she has coming in to visit. The child has a home at school where the teacher expects a certain things out of the child, and the other children in school expect the child to come out of a balanced, normal home like they do, you know. Now, and that's four different homes that this child has to grow up with. And then the child is also of foreign extraction and learns of her homeland in another country and learns of her homeland where she lives. So she has two homelands, two nations on which the principles that guide those nations are principles that are put into her mind. And I mean, my God, that's six, you know, six different conditions. And for any child to come out of that halfway decent, balanced, or organized would be amazing. Just think how lovely. Just think how lovely if you were a starfish and you were thrown into your own tidal pool and that's all you had to be concerned about. Mm. Just living in peace in that tide pool. How lovely if this child could have one family, one country, one home. What a balance it would make in her life. Now, can that happen? No. Because the father wants the child, wants to have the child for a period of time. The mother wants to have the child for a period of time. And the other people involved have the child for a period of time. And the child is taken to its native country, you might say, and brought back to its ordinary country that it lives in all the time. What a condition. Wouldn't it be wonderful if that child were treated with the same gentleness of a starfish and just thrown into the tide pool where it is most at home. And it would suffer maybe the tide going out occasionally and coming in. It'd be dry for a while, and then come alive again. Or maybe it would want to be further out in the ocean. Maybe it would want to be deeper in the ocean, where the tide pools wouldn't disturb it, but it would have its other natural enemies. But it would always live within its starfish cell. Something to think about. Something to think about. What do we want for ourselves? We give our children all the confusion of the world for television, all the confusion of the world for the radio, all the confusion of the world of these different types of music that are available for them to enjoy. And they're supposed to get excited about it because their parents are excited about the hard rock or the hard metal or the classical or whatever they're involved in. And what a busy life. And what is it? Searching for Nemo, is it?
Nemo.
Searching for Nemo?
Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo. What was his father most frightened about? His father was most frightened about the fact he might lose Nemo, because Nemo was the only thing left in his home. And now the father, in the lack of wisdom, protected Nemo in a way that Nemo, when the father is no longer there, would be doing his own thing. He wouldn't have built up those devices of being free, and if he sees something that disturbs him, he swims away from it quickly. If he sees something that's exciting, he swims over and takes a look, you know. And fearless, and yet aware of where things are that he shouldn't be fooling around with. But this took a training. That took a training. And so it takes a training for children. And so it takes a training for adults. And we adults, we think we're so capable that we can look at pornographic material and not have it disturb us. We think we can look at the news and not have it disturb us. Same thing as pornographic material. We think we can look at the problems of the world and not have it disturb us. Now, if adults of the world were taught to look at the solutions of the world, wow. If adults of the world were taught to look at only those things that they themselves approved of, then a lot of them would be looking at pornographic materials and a lot wouldn't, and they wouldn't feel bad about it. And there'd be less looking at it because there'd be less having to go against the grain. When prohibition was in and you couldn't drink, more people drank. When prohibition was out, less people drank. How interesting. Still a lot. And then all of a sudden, around the world, alcohol took on a bad picture, and so it was reduced in use. And then smoking, and the nations of the world virtually are following with that pattern of no smoking. And the country that promotes it, no smoking the biggest, is the United States, and the United States is the biggest producer of cigarettes and smoking materials, which go around the world. And yet, the companies who build it, who produce it, will not stop because it is such an economically desirable thing. And our government, which says we shouldn't smoke, says you can raise all the smokes you want and sell them everywhere you want and have it made in the USA. And you see, we live in this confusing world that we have, but we don't have to be that way. We can settle down, and we can be a starfish in our own little tide pool and be a happy starfish. So, my dear starfish, I wish you all a happy starfish day, and may your tide pool always be full and running. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Thank you.